o'clock Central Tuesday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Get in touch with the show if you are listening live via the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox 650-650. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Canucks taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning today at Amalie Arena. Tampa Bay with their second game of the season. First at home, their first game was supposed to be last week, but it was postponed due to what was Hurricane Milton. And thankfully, they are able to get things back up and going. I saw Murph tweet today that there was some help from those in BC going down there to help Tampa Bay and that area get their power back on. So look at that. It's always people helping people. We love to see it.
Yeah. I know when you see situations like this unfold, a lot of people ask how they can help. And these are people that will literally put themselves at risk to help others. So big, big kudos.
It's a good story and also puts the Canucks in a tough spot. You know, Tampa Bay is going to be all over it tonight. We'll get into the pregame coming up after 3 o'clock. And obviously some of the storylines for the game. Shilov's getting the start. Myers, technically a game time decision. Tockett saying he is a good possibility. We'll get to that in the roundup. But just before the show started, Boss, yeah, our fearless leader, mentions to me, hey, congratulations, Dan.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what? Congratulations for what? What did I do? I'm celebrating 15 years
it's
of sports.
It's been 84
today.
Years.
Yeah, it feels like it sometimes.
You've been with the company for 15 years.
Yeah, 15 years. Started as a little pichinero and now I've grown into a 15-year vet.
I don't know these words. I just kind of roll with it now. I'm like, yeah, sure.
The only thing that's like a relic of my time from when I started is my pass card. And I don't know if like people, I still have the same pass card. And people look at it and like, what? Is that the same person? It's pretty great.
Oh, yeah, a young reach 15 years ago.
People can really see it. Just so Lena and Dom can see it back there. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
It's an oldie, but a goodie.
Yeah,
you've had a glow up.
Yeah, that's what they tell me.
Yeah, listen, just like a nice Italian wine, you have aged well.
So it got me thinking, who are the Canucks that had 15 years?
15-year Canucks? Did you look it up?
I have looked it up.
You have? Okay.
But I'm wondering if you can guess.
How many?
Yeah, how many? How many? Or if you could, like, it's there's not many, so you could probably name all of them.
Smeal.
No.
No, really?
They're all, like, incredibly obvious, actually.
Like Henrik, Daniel.
Yeah.
Right.
There's two.
Trevor?
Trevor would be three.
Three, okay.
And the fourth, I mean, there's an
Edler?
Easy... Yeah, there's an easy give. Yeah. I was going to say, recently celebrated here in Vancouver. The fourth and last one is Alex Edler.
Okay. All right. So, 15 years. So, you are the same as the Sedins.
Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer.
Let's
in broadcasting,
go.
15 years. 15 years of one. Honestly, like the longevity in this industry.
Yeah. You know, we'd like to keep it that way.
Yes. Yeah.
For those listening.
Yeah, let's not talk about it too much, I suppose.
I got two jobs.
All right, let's get to the open here on Canuck Central.
Welcome to the open.
Oh! That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
The Open, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. And, you know, one of the storylines here, Sat, going into this game, of course, Canucks are 0-2. And, you know, for as much as, you know, we've had, it feels like a lot of time to parse through these two games and pick them apart every which way possible. The hardest thing with all of the time in between the second loss and this third game is like trying not to talk yourself into an overreaction of some kind. That's from my personal perspective. That's what I've struggled with over the weekend.
Yeah, honestly, like so, I've had a lot of time to think and kind of consume content the last few days. I wasn't feeling
rewatching
great.
The game. It's like, man, you're really looking for every little detail that was off. And
yeah,
it's like maybe it's not the time.
I think there is an overanalysis going on in general. 100%. 100%. And here's
for me, like I'm speaking from my own personal beliefs here.
Yeah.
That there is a lot of too much overreactions going on.
I see a lot of red flag talk from you, and I'm like, Reach, you need to calm down, man. A lot of red flags.
I asked listeners what their red flags but were, because I know they've got more
Anyway, and part of you is like seeing some red flags. I know you said caution flags yesterday, maybe
more a yellow card than a red card, okay?
So how would we react to any two-game stretch in the middle of the season in general?
Not all that crazily.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, back-to-back losses. I mean, we would note that they'd blown third-period leads, and I think that, you know, that would be obviously something worth criticizing. I'm not sure you're drawing any big conclusions from it. I think also early in the season, it's very easy to have confirmation bias one way or another. If you had certain concerns, and to what you mentioned after the first game, Reach, that if you wanted to confirm your concerns, you could find plenty of instances in that first game. So because of that, I think it's created more angst than usual to start to the season. And listen, we don't know if this team is going to be good or not.
Yeah.
We don't know if it's going to be bad. We don't know if it's going to be great. But what I do know is we don't know anything after two games. It's going to take a lot more than two games for us to really find out what this team is about. I know that's a boring answer.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the reality of the situation. And given that we have 82 games ahead of us, I'm very comfortable like just having good at-bats right now, dude. Like, honestly, I'm not worried about, honestly, like if I get on base, I get on base. But I'm not going to fire off any ridiculous takes right now, at least not until we see something very obvious. And I don't think anything so far has been obvious.
I don't know. I heard the fan hockey show this morning talking about must wins for the Edmonton Oilers as if last year never happened, where they played at like 130 point pace for the final 60 games of the season or whatever it was. But I'll digress. Okay. Like it's we're with you. I'm certainly with you. The hardest part of these first two games is trying not to overreact because, yeah, there's some things the Canucks need to clean up, but also there's nothing here that's like, oh my God, this is way out of left field that we did not expect. No, none of that has happened. It's only two games, and they're still working things out. They're trying to get sharper. And they are still very much trying to integrate the new group. And this is where we get to the open and the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. They're changing up some of the lines they had penciled in through the course of the summer and going with a different look. At least that's what we expect going into the game against Tampa Bay. And from Sportsnet Murph yesterday, Dan Murphy, his best guess at what the lines look like. Archdeep Baines playing with Miller and Besser. Danton Heinen bumped down to play with Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusk. The bottom six remaining the same with Daniel Sprong coming out of the lineup, which we'll talk more about, I think, in pregame on Daniel Sprong and his start to his Canucks career. So before we get to Baines, who's getting put in a big spot here by the coach, DeBrusk and Pettersson was the duo we were most intrigued by coming into the season, because you had the duo of Miller and Besser. That's not going to change. You felt like you had one of your two top six lines figured out because you know what you're going to get out of Miller and Besser. One of the big offseason projects was getting Elias Pettersson a winger, a credible top six winger that he could run with. And Jake DeBrusk was the guy they identified in free agency, gave him the 7-year contract. And I don't think it's been poor through two games. I think I've certainly seen flashes that I like. But ultimately, how much does the Canucks finding their ceiling, finding success, depend on Jake DeBrusk molding with Elias Pettersson?
I think Jake DeBrusk being successful, period, is the most important thing. Hopefully it's with Pettersson. Doesn't have to be with Pettersson. But if it's not with Pettersson, Pettersson still has to be successful without DeBrusk.
Yes.
You need both guys to be good. You hope it's together, because part of the projection with DeBrusk, with the contract they gave him, was, and you outlined the scoring rates, you compared it to Zach Hyman. Not saying he's going to be Zach Hyman, but prior to the trade. And the conclusion was,
they're betting on a breakout.
Yeah, not just because the player is going to break out, but there's going to be an environment led by a superstar center.
Yeah.
And Elias Pettersson, that's going to allow him to take that other step. Can he increase his worth and value playing with a player that he's going to mesh with? That's an elite level talent. But when you looked at his game overall, you still wondered, it's a projection. It's not a certainty. But if it doesn't work with Pettersson, him playing alongside JT Miller looks pretty enticing.
Yeah.
And even with Besser, I think that line could be a really nice line. But then that leaves the question, who's going to run with Pettersson? And can Pettersson get back to being an elite-level player with or without DeBrusk, right? So I think that's kind of like the boring way of looking at it, but I think that's kind of the way I view that entire situation. But at the end of the day, is Pettersson going to be able to elevate DeBrusk? I think that's what they're trying to find out. And that's why I don't think I think it is notable that they're already changed the third guy on that line,
right?
Which means it's not working so far. How do you get it to work? And that may take some time as well, to your point. I mean, we're talking about a new player, new team, who's admitted he is going through an adjustment period. He said the other night after the first game that maybe he's thinking a bit too much at times. Mm-hmm. He's worrying about what to do and where to be system-wise as opposed to just playing. So I think we have to let that kind of breathe a little bit. Like, I don't think we can draw any real conclusions on those guys having chemistry or not after a couple of games. Again, boring answer, but we kind of need like 15, 20 games to have like real conclusions. I think we can evaluate, right? I think I know we're so obsessed with the big picture. Is Pettersson going to be back? Is DeBrusk going to be worth the money?
Yeah.
But it's like, you got to kind of go through game by game before you get there. And right now we're two games in. And I'd say the focus should be, okay, how do we evaluate what's happened so far and how they can improve? And let's watch and see if they can improve over time. I know that's boring to a lot of people, but I'm promising you guys, you're not going to find the answers you want in the first 5, 6, 7, 8 games of the season.
I do. It's hard to disagree with you because, again, two games. There has been a lot to like, and not that I'm trying to drag Daniel Sprong at all, but, you know.
Here he is getting dragged.
Here it is. The line, at least, from, you know, who's generating the shots on the ice when they've been together, Pettersson and DeBrusk, in the little time that they've played without Daniel Sprong, have had better results. Now, mm-hmm. we're talking about like less than a full game's worth of time on the ice without Daniel Sprong. So you have to take that into context when thinking of it this way. But there has been certainly a big adjustment period with Pettersson having not just one new line mate to the Canucks, but also two with mm-hmm. Daniel Sprong. Now, it's not going to change much with Danton Heinen, but it might change the mix of how that line works. Maybe Heinen is more often the guy that is F1 today, and that changes how Pettersson and DeBrusk are able to work off of each other. You definitely need time for these things to develop, for chemistry to develop, and those things to play out. But there is and will come a point where it's not too early in the season. You do not need to start seeing results. But ultimately, does this not all come back around to Elias Pettersson?
Well, it always comes down to your best players.
Yes.
Right? That's ultimately what it is. And to be honest, we saw some great things from JT in the first game.
Yeah.
The top six in general was non-existent in the second game. That included JT Miller. So we haven't even seen JT play his best yet. I'd say that Quinn right now is dealing with teams playing him slightly differently.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to deal with that too. Much like, I think Quinn is a microcosm of the team as a whole.
Yeah.
That it's different this year. As much as you may think you kind of have a way of playing, you have to adjust to how the league is adjusting to you.
Yeah.
And that takes a little bit of time as well. But so far, we haven't seen the best out of their best players.
And I think Pettersson, there's, with the way that he practiced over the weekend, there was almost a self-admission that he's not where he feels he needs to be. And so he started early at practice, stayed late at practice. Coach says he's going to have to keep doing this and get his confidence back. And this is going to be a good thing to chip away at his game and classic talkisms, as we know. But ultimately, you know, I don't think I ever viewed Jake DeBrusk as a guy who's going to drive play, but I see him as a guy scoring 30 goals next to an elite centerman and Elias Pettersson. And so that's something that the Canucks absolutely need to find. Now, the other lineup change here is Arshdeep Bains coming into the lineup for Daniel Sprong, and instead of putting him into a bottom six role and maybe elevating Nils Höglander, who we saw take a few shifts with Miller and Besser in the last game, Arshdeep Bains, from the way they practiced over the last couple of days, is going straight in to play with Miller and Besser. He got a couple of opportunities there last year as well. I think from an organizational philosophy, I like this idea, because if you're going to bring up a guy who profiles as somebody who's going to help you offensively, let's bring him up and give him a real chance in a real spot in the lineup, rather than burying him somewhere down on the fourth line. And if we end up trailing in the game, that guy's going to end up playing 6 or 7 minutes a night. You know, like they want Arshdeep Bains. They're giving Arshdeep Bains a chance here to maybe earn more than what he was expected to have to start this season.
Yeah. And we've seen him play there before.
Yeah.
We saw him play there last year. And I think it's part of it is familiarity and give him a soft landing spot. But it's also going to be dependent on how he plays.
Yeah.
Just because he starts there doesn't mean he's going to finish the game there. You mentioned Sprong before, but Sprong went from starting games played with Pettersson to barely being played.
It's a short leash.
So same thing for Bains here. And I think there was a great opportunity here for Bains, though, because the thing about him that makes the coach trust him already, at least so far, is because he has good details in his game. He knows how to play the game the right way. He thinks the game in a good way. And even if the bottom line doesn't show up, I think the coach feels comfortable having him out there. And that's something that it ultimately comes down to. Does a coach trust you? And the fact that Bains seemingly is earning the coach's trust pretty early, that bodes very well for him. That gives him a start. But he has to come through. I think what he showed in the preseason was really solid, right? Like, especially that final game against Edmonton. He was active. He made good plays under pressure. He scored a goal. He was good defensively. But regular season pace is different. What kept him from making a bigger impact last year was he couldn't quite make the difference with the pace of the game. Like, he had some good moments, but you could tell he needed to get a little quicker. Processing needs to get a little bit better, right? How does that look?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm looking for here with Bains, because if that pops and shows well, then he has a path with the coach here who would trust him because of the way he plays. But can he play at a regular season pace and be successful?
And that's ultimately what you're looking for, because this team, you know, they went out looking for more top six forwards, more options for their top six. They signed four forwards over the course of the summer, not really any one of them. DeBrusque had a ton of top six opportunities. He had scoring rates that suggest he could play regularly in the top six, but you know, there was a reason he was on the trade block in Boston. He requested a trade. He wasn't fully trusted for a lot of those years in Boston. Canucks very much are still searching for more impact players on this roster. Can Bains be one of them? He's got a chance to prove some of that now. And, you know, one thing you're going to have to look for from him, as Rick Tocchet mentioned in his pregame availability today, is how does he do on the forecheck? And does he help, dig out pucks for Miller and Besser? Because that's essentially going to be one of his big tasks and one of his duties here on this top line when he starts tonight.
Yeah, and that's something with Heinen, that he showed moments of doing so, but he wasn't super fast getting in as being the first forechecker, and that's what they want. They want somebody to be very aggressive with their forecheck and be able to dig out a lot of pucks. And until we see JT get going, that becomes even more important. JT looked really good in the first game at parts, but other parts of his game weren't great. We know that he was dealing with something through preseason, and he only played the final preseason game. How long does it take for JT to get up to speed? And I think as long as that's going to be a work in progress, you need to have a lot of energy on at least one of his wings.
JT, just a quick thought on that. Like, he just feels like he's not seeing the ice as well as he was for much of last year. We've seen some of the ugly turnovers pop up back in his game that we saw in earlier years. I think and imagine those will get cleaned up as the year goes on. All right, Canucks Central roundup. Canucks and Tampa Bay Lightning today. Myers is a game time decision. Tocchet saying he's a good possibility, which makes me believe that Myers is going to be in the lineup.
Yeah, and he said it's about managing pain.
Yeah.
It sounds like a Charlie horse, doesn't it?
Yeah, sounds like a contusion of some kind after the collision.
Yeah. And if you've had a Charlie horse, when you first feel it, you feel like you blew something out. Like, that's what it feels like, right? You get paralyzed initially, and you're like, what happened? And it can be really, really sore for a day or two, but you work through it. That's what it seems like, which is like the best news, because it looked like he like screwed his knee up. That's what it looked like initially.
Rashee Rice.
Yeah.
Similar to what happened there, where he just got his knee into a really, really tough spot. So we'll see what happens. We'll have the latest once warm-ups begin just after 3:30 at Amalie Arena in Tampa Bay. Shelov's getting the start in net. I guess I was a little bit surprised just given how well Lankinen played on Friday against Philadelphia, but it sort of says to me that this was the plan going into the start of the season, and they see no reason to diverge from the plan just yet.
Yeah, it's too early. Again, I know people don't want to hear it, and three-putt Shane was texting in. Last year was all about the start, and this year everyone's like, hey, you know, the start doesn't matter. The start matters, but it's two games in.
And they're at a 500-point percentage, so they're kind of fine.
It's like, let's see the 10-20. Even last year was like, hey, let's see what it looks like after 10-20 games. It was like, remember the first couple games to beat Edmonton? People got super excited.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, let's see how they do. Let's see what it looks like after 10 games. And they were great after 10-20 games, right? Let's see what happens after. The start isn't the first two or five games. The start is the first 20 games.
Yeah.
That's what matters. And let's see what happens by the 20-game mark. But on that point, like, I do agree that in terms of them trying to get more, I think it's... I kind of lost my train of thought for a second here.
On the goalie split with Lankinen and Shelov.
Now, I think that was already in plan, because like we talked about, did you want to have 7-8 days off for Shelov's after the start? And you just need to get both guys up to speed. There's no back-to-backs?
Probably not. And Shelov's like... I guess the other way of thinking about this is like, if you went to the goalies and had the conversation with them before the season starts, like, hey, we're going to split your guys' starts for the first little bit, and that's going to be the plan. And maybe, I don't know if they set out a full schedule of like, hey, this is what we're planning, but it's always felt like there was going to be a pretty 50-50 split to start these first few games. And if you divulge from that plan, if you change that plan, because Shelov's wasn't great in the first game and Lankinen looked great in the second game, and now you're already changing the... Like, just stick with the plan. Everybody knows what the plan is, and it keeps everybody less calm, not feeling any panic, because you lost two games in overtime.
Well, that's true. And the thing is, like, there are no back-to-backs coming up until next month, right? So there's a good 10-game stretch here where they could just alternate starts.
Yeah.
But it will also depend on how players are performing.
Yes.
Like, Shelov's wasn't great in the first game. Now, we spoke about how Woodley broke down, that it wasn't maybe as bad as people thought in terms of some of the scoring chances and how the data came up, but it was still gave up more than he should have given the chances. If he has a poor game tonight, and Lankinen plays well the next start, at some point he's going to get more starts.
Yeah. At some point you will have to change the plan, but I don't think now is necessarily the time.
But is this game bigger then? Because, I mean, if he has another poor game, do they look at it and say, hey, well, it all depends on how Lankinen plays the next game as well, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know if that kind of grace period really extends beyond 2-3 starts. You know what I mean?
That's fair. With the way the schedule is, if Lankinen keeps playing well and Shelov's not, you're going to change that plan pretty quickly and maybe give Lankinen a couple more starts ahead of Shelov's and give him time to work on his game. It is a four-game road trip that starts today at Tampa Bay, at Florida. And Florida, I know you don't love the term, but it's looking kind of like a scheduled win because Barkov is hurt.
Yeah.
Tkachuk is not going to play. It'll be their third game in four nights, coming back off of a road trip early in the season. I'll just say, the Canucks are in a favorable position when they go to visit the Stanley Cup, the defending Stanley Cup.
Yeah, they are. They better take care of business that game.
Because they're not in a favorable position today, right? Like Tampa Bay coming home after the Hurricanes, as mentioned earlier, and also the Canucks' first game on an Eastern road swing always is a tough spot for basically any Western Conference team. At Philadelphia on Saturday, and they close it out at Chicago next week. Normally, like, my feeling is 500, like, go 500 on a road trip, get at least half of the points available to you. Obviously, like, 5 out of 8, which isn't a lot more than 4 out of 8. Like, 5 out of 8 would be very nice.
Yeah.
And 6 out of 8 would be a great road trip.
Yeah, I think, I mean, should we not expect it to be, you know, 5 to 6 points? Don't just be 500.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, again, like, I'm not going to write them off if they're 500 after the road trip, but it'd be nice to see them, you know, have a strong road trip.
I'm okay with, I think that's going to be Philly's home opener too. I'd have to double check that, but, like, you know, early in the season, I'm okay with 500.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
I know you got high standards, Zach.
But. No, I know. I mean, hey, listen, like I said, to me, 20 games, they need to be, you know, a couple games over 500 at the 20-game mark. Like, I want to see them have a nice record after 20 games.
Yeah.
Does it matter how they get there? I suppose not, but because they lost the first two games, and honestly, the main reason, because I do all the post-game shows, I don't want to deal with early season angst as much as we've had it so far already.
Well, you could
so
be.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
You could be the Oilers, who are 0-3 with no points so far, and playing again tonight. We'll see what happens with the Oilers up against the Philadelphia Flyers. That's one to keep an eye on later on this evening on Sportsnet 1. We do have some questions coming in. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. We'll get to some of those in the next segment. Also, Eddie Lack is going to join us. He's coming up to Vancouver for the Can Pro-Am. So we'll talk to Eddie, his take on the Canucks start to the season, some of their goaltending question marks, and what he's seeing from the club. Plus, people are hoping to see the ID pick on X now that I've talked about it. I don't know if I'm willing to do this, but I guess I kind of have to.
We've seen the Chara pick. This is not that bad.
You might have. Yeah,
it's not that bad.
It's not as,
the Chara
not as bad.
The Chara pick, like, yeah, I had to lose a bet to give that one up.
Yeah, this one's not as bad. You can post it. I'm sure people will have a laugh, but it's not
overly. If anything, it accentuates the glow up.
I guess it does. It might accentuate the glow
Imagine
up.
Imagine if it was the other way around.
Wow, Dan, you used to be like a hot shot. I don't know, center in high school, eh?
Yeah.
I guess so.
You never want to peak too early.
Yeah. That was my from my college days, playing with the old Seneca Sting,
right,
with Angela James as our head coach. But it wasn't really like
that. Makes you attractive.
Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. It is Canuck Central coming up. Eddie Lack on Sports at 650.